This episode of Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code UNTITLED.
Welcome to Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, welcome back, guys.
Welcome back.
Oh,
Will.
Yeah.
We missed
welcome
you.
Everyone. Yeah, welcome all back.
I feel like I missed a couple of episodes there, but I've watched one of them and it was really great.
Well, the other one's so much better.
Okay. Which one's the good one?
I have no idea.
The one when we talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
things.
Oh, okay. The stuff and things one.
The great. Stuff and things. So check this out. I just got this because
it's an artifact.
I love it. It is a stainless steel ring.
Okay.
It's genuinely a stainless steel ring.
Ooh, it's light.
But inside it, it has a groove on the inside, and in that groove is fit a hardened steel saw that also acts as a handcuff shim.
It looks like you would really gouge your fingers trying to use this saw.
I'm certain it would not be easy to use that saw, but I am also certain that at the point at which you need that saw, you don't care about easy.
Fair point.
If they're going to let you keep the ring, then...
Exactly.
You can't be in that bad of a situation.
Do they take the ring when you're putting? Do they?
I don't think they take a ring if you've. I don't know.
Wait. What? Okay. When we think about scenarios where we would need this, what is the first scenario that comes to mind?
Captured by spies.
Abduction
by
rabid fans.
No, not by rabid fans.
Are you talking about a misery sirens?
No. I'm thinking abduction by like gorillas.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So like, in that case, I think they would let me keep the ring.
No, I think they would take all possessions because they'd want to sell them.
Right.
Like gold rings and stuff.
You know, I learned from Pulp Fiction that there's only one place that a man can hide something.
I've got one right up on the wall there, this uncomfortable hunk of metal.
Oh, great. Christopher Walken is a real prince of a man.
I have never put the watch in my ass. I'm not into that much accuracy.
Has someone, though?
Not that watch.
I bet if you sent it to Walken's people, he could probably make that happen.
Actually been in Christopher Walken's butt.
Do you think he's a method guy? Do you think he actually did that?
I don't think he did that.
I gotta imagine.
I totally don't think he did that. I heard a rumor that he has punctuation removed from his scripts before he sees them.
Wow.
That
makes perfect sense,
doesn't it?
Everything
he determines the cadence of the way he talks.
Yeah.
Not the script.
Wow. Exactly.
That's insane.
that's an easy job. That's got to control F and delete all the periods and commas.
It's just like my nightmare would be reading something with no punctuation.
Right.
It's a script length.
It would be far out.
It would be really, really not good. Speaking of things that are far out, we were going to talk about Hunter Thompson for a while.
We've been wanting to talk about Hunter Thompson.
My guess is that we've all come at Hunter Thompson from different places.
Yeah.
Because of slight differences in age and things like that. But I had a high school teacher hand me a copy of my high school English teacher my senior year after really loving On the Road. And I want to say electric Kool-Aid acid test, but it must have been the right stuff is probably what they
okay.
gave. Because I can't imagine she would have given us electric Kool-Aid acid test in a small high school.
Bauhaus to our house.
Well, it was another Tom Wolfe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Another,
it could have been Bauhaus.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably right stuff. And then she said, hey, I'm not going to give you this officially. If your parents complain, I'm going to deny everything.
Wow. Brilliant.
But you should read this. It's really good.
And it was Fear and Loathing.
It was Fear and Loathing.
Okay.
In Las Vegas, not on the
Yeah, yeah, show. Yeah.
And from there, as like 17 or 18-year-old Will, like basically went to the library, the real library, not the high school library, and got everything.
All of them.
And in the course of maybe 4 months one summer, read all the political books, all Hell's Angels, which is a personal favorite, Rum Diaries, all the stuff that was...
Rum Diaries, I barely remember, although I did read it way back when.
So there was a movie.
I know. With Johnny Depp.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Was it?
I haven't seen it.
It is not a property that would translate well to movie.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as I love Gilliam and Depp, I thought that also Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was, in some places, perfect and brilliant. Like, Benicio del Toro is the perfect lawyer. And I'm including that I think Peter Boyle, in the original... Where the Buffalo Roam.
With Bill Murray.
Yeah. Is also a terrific lawyer.
I think Where the Buffalo Roam is a better Hunter Thompson movie.
But I
love the Terry Gilliam
movie. Yeah, yeah. So I have a very similar experience with Thompson. I think I discovered him. My dad used to quote him. And he'd quote this one quote, which was, and it's a quote from Fear and Loathing. in which he says, the Circus Hotel and Casino is what all of America would be doing on Saturday nights if the Germans had won World War II.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Have you ever stayed in the Circus?
I have not, but I've been to it.
So, wait, with Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Because they have one in Reno also.
The Vegas one is...
I've been there recently.
What the whole hip world... Yeah, and it is terrifying. It is. The picture he paints in Fear and Loathing, the movie, is... I can't imagine what it was like in the 70s when people were doing a lot more drugs.
Right.
But it's terrifying now. I stayed there the first time I went to Vegas because it was all we could afford.
Right, right.
And we didn't even stay in the actual hotel. We stayed in the cinder block buildings out back.
Oh.
But just walking through the casino, through the circus thing in the big town, it's nightmarish.
It's crazy.
Yeah, bad things, man.
So I knew that Hunter Thompson existed. I knew that Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was a famous book. And I think I probably picked it up at 19 or 20.
It seems like the right age.
Yeah. It's similar in the way that Tom Robbins and Kurt Vonnegut are both great authors to just grab when you're just out of high school,
mm-hmm.
and just to devour. And I did the same thing. I kept on finding the books at bookshops and bookstands, Curse of Lono, mm-hmm. Campaign Trail. I remember Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, which is less a chronicle than a bunch of essays.
I think it's a collection of the essays in a less condensed form than appeared in Rolling Stone.
Yes.
Because he covered McGovern, I think.
Right.
It's been a long time since I read those.
But I mean, in that, I believe Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail is where he describes seeing Jimmy Carter speak for the first time.
Mm.
Or is that a different one?
I think that's Curse of Lono or one of the later...
It's not Curse of Lono.
It's one of the later political collections.
Right, right.
Because there's like four of those that end with...
I'm trying to remember which one. At any rate, he was a huge fan of Jimmy Carter's. And it was amazing to read Thompson actually loving a politician.
Because even when he was following McGovern, he really didn't like Humphrey Hoover.
Yeah, Humphrey.
Humphrey. Herbert Humphrey.
Yeah.
Yeah. He detested him.
Hubert Humphrey.
He sounds like a fake name. I can't believe we're talking about the esoterica of early 70s politics.
Sorry.
The descriptions of politicians and his unflinching way of calling bullshit on things that he thought were bullshit made him, I mean, at the time it was revolutionary. Now everything that's come since has kind of reflected that, I think.
Well, and we should be clear that along with Tom Wolfe, mm-hmm. Hunter Thompson, the two of them are absolutely describe the two poles of what was in the mid-60s and early 70s referred to as the new journalism.
Right.
And Thompson described it as gonzo journalism, mm-hmm. but the key difference between it and everything that came before it was that in their stories, the journalist was part of the story. Yep. They were not a fly on the wall. They were actively participating in the story. And Hell's Angels is a hilarious example. He even gets his ass kicked and stomped by a bunch of Hell's Angels in the middle of this book.
And in the middle of Hell's Angels and the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, those two books cross paths.
I did not realize that.
Because Ken Casey's Merry Pranksters, who were on the hip of the, on the peak of the acid revolution of the 60s in San Francisco, crossed paths with the Hell's Angels, who were really into drug distribution.
I forgot about that.
And also acid at the compound out in San Bernardino, wherever the hell that ended up being. So there's a point where Hunter Thompson appears in Tom Wolfe's book, and Tom Wolfe appears in Hunter Thompson's book.
That I totally did not realize at the time.
Oh, it's amazing.
Wow.
I mean, it's like the best. It's
right. And I mean, they couldn't be more different, too, as authors, as chroniclers. And from everything I've ever heard, and I have since met a bunch of people that knew Hunter. I never was able to meet him, which I'm sad about, because he was really important to me at a period of time. You know, the way he wrote about politics was, I mean, you say unflinching. If you read it now, and if you listen to this and you go read Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, you might think that some of what he writes is hyperbolic. But I can tell you that everybody who's ever talked about Hunter Thompson is like, no, the problem with him is he tells the unvarnished truth about what really goes on in politics, and it's much worse than anybody thinks it is.
Well, it shaped my view on our entire political system.
Absolutely.
Probably in a negative way.
There's in one of his books, he actually has, and I always love this when an author does this, and I'm going to go off on a tiny tangent and say, from everything I've heard from people who knew him, being around Hunter was worse than he describes in his books.
You mean from him being a miserable bastard to be around?
Yeah. And being a awful person to have as an editor, to count on him turning something in with any bit of timeliness. That when he writes, it's like, I'm in the hotel room and we're using the telex machine and faxing handwritten pages one at a time. Like editors, it was like, they were like, he's making it sound linear. And it totally was not.
Because, I mean, just to be clear, he had a reputation as being a prolific drug abuser.
Yeah.
All varieties, all shapes, all sizes, yes. Usually mixed together. So the idea that he could turn in a linear manuscript is pretty, like, it's a testament to the level of interesting that he was.
Well, he's a real writer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a genuinely real writer. I mean, I love this. Two things about him being a real writer. One is, in one of his compilations, there's a beautiful analysis from him where he reviews Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, I never read that.
And he reviews it from the standpoint of what he set out to do. And he considers it an abject failure, considering what he set out to do.
Well, he went out
but to a cover. Total success in a completely different realm and opened up to him whole new vistas of what he could do.
What was the difference?
If I remember correctly, he wanted it to be a much more surrealistic journey. And I think he was looking, I can't even remember what he said he was originally attempting to capture. But he didn't get it. But I mean, by any metric, Fear and Loathing is his. I think
it's one of the
best
great books of the 20th century.
Totally,
yeah.
You laugh all the way through it. It's horrifying and amazing, and just it's brilliantly written. The other one I remember, and this stuck with me forever, was he was reviewing newspaper writing in general, which he had very little patience for, and he said,
and he was a former newspaper man.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The story, the Rum Diary. If you watch the movie, The Rum Diaries, first, I'm sorry, but second, he's that chronicles a time when he was one of the four reporters or whatever for the paper that was in San Juan.
Right, right.
Like it is a, like, that was a real part of his life. You can read his memoirs. The letters from that time period are fascinating because he was discovering rum and smoking weed and all sorts of other
Know if kids in these days are actually inculcated with this, but I remember being taught that the journalistic form was called the reverse pyramid.
Okay.
The inverse pyramid form, in which you started out with the broadest piece of information, and you slowly, through the course of the story, got more and more specific as you went. And I remembered that from grade school and laughed when he wrote, the world is packed with reporters who have, you know, stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars abusing the reverse pyramid form. His analysis of other writers, I think he also had great respect and also interesting critique for Tom Wolfe's style of writing.
To be clear, Tom Wolfe and Hunter Thompson and Tom Wolfe are kind of, you said they're polar opposites of the new journalism, but they're also one axis off of each other.
Absolutely.
In that the core tenet is, hey, you can't, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, not the Breaking Bad Heisenberg, but the original, is that you can't look at something without changing it fundamentally.
It, yes. Yeah.
And they both took that information and this kind of new world of physics and science that were rising in the 40s and 50s and early 60s, and they went completely different ways with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry.
No, now I'm remembering my favorite bit from one of the compilations was the... he managed to snake a late night interview with Muhammad Ali. Do you remember this story?
I've read this one, but I don't remember this.
So
this is in the 60s. Is he Muhammad
this is
Ali?
Muhammad Ali. This is, I think, in the early 70s.
Okay.
Muhammad Ali is at his peak. And he is Muhammad Ali. He's no longer Cassius Clay. He's a clean living Muslim man, and he's got his entourage, and his entourage doesn't want him to have anything to do with filthy drug addled Hunter Thompson.
Yeah.
And he's in town. And he somehow manages to arrange a late night interview while Ali's manager isn't there.
That's gold.
Right.
Yeah.
So they get into the same room and it's like, you know, midnight. And Ali shouldn't even be awake according to his training schedule. And he and Thompson start talking and they're having a great time. They totally get along great. And Thompson is giving him advice for how he should, like, big up his image. And he says, wait a minute, I've got it in my room. I'm going to bring it back. And he goes into his room, and he's got some of his people there, right? He goes into his room, and he comes back in a gorilla mask.
Hunter Thompson.
Hunter Thompson does.
To Muhammad Ali.
To Muhammad Ali. And he runs into the room and he's like, I'm going to get you, motherfucker! Screaming at him, right? And the room falls dead silent.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And Ali laughs his ass off. And they were, and literally like 20 minutes later, Ali's manager comes in and is like, what's the noise? You know, everyone's in trouble, including the champ.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about him was he was so kind of... The mainstream press didn't like Hunter Thompson.
Yeah.
When he was on the campaign trail and he was on the buses and planes with the just to be clear, the reporter from Rolling Stone was on the bus and the plane and the train with the guy who was running for president, right, who at the time was considered probably the front runner to beat Nixon.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people from the New York Times and the Washington Post and all the real newspapers,
yeah,
like, what the fuck is this drug-addled asshole doing on the plane with us? You know, because he's the guy that rolls on at the last minute smelling of booze and weed, yeah, and all sorts. And it really reshaped the way American politics is reported. And then you also have to look at stuff like the Kentucky Derby essay.
Yeah.
Which I want to say it was called Fear and Loathing in the Kentucky Derby, I
don't think that was. And he goes there with Stedman, right? Yeah, yeah, he picks up, because if I remember correctly, Ralph Stedman at the end of the Kentucky Derby story is left shoeless in Grand Central Station
yeah, that's right,
with not enough money to get home.
Right. No wallet, no ID, no money, no shoes. Oh. And Stedman is the guy who is the illustrator who did the ink drawings,
yes,
that everybody associates with.
So when you look at the cover that you're thinking of in your head of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, that's Ralph Stedman.
Oh,
Ralph,
you mean
Stedman,
the picture of Johnny Depp and Benicio del Toro?
No. The original one. Ralph Stedman's an amazing illustrator, has a bunch of really important books out of his illustrations of dogs. Dogs is a famous one. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites.
He's great.
And they had an amazing collaboration, an incredible collaboration. Chris of Lono is probably the most beautiful.
He's written a couple things, and I want to say they were like long magazine articles about his relationship with Hunter. One was... It was right after Hunter killed himself.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, if you like Hunter Thompson, you should go read The Seven Things. It gives you a completely different perspective on what it was like being on the inside, but still the outside of that level of manic,
yeah,
insanity.
So when Hunter killed himself and the funeral was happening in Aspen, the t-shirts, They printed up some memorial t-shirts for him, which was his sign, which is a little fist inside holding a peyote button.
Right. With a knife out of the top.
Yeah. And somebody gave me one of those shirts very graciously, and I wore it on the show on Mythbusters, and I got a lovely, lovely letter from Hunter's widow.
Oh, really?
Saying, thank you for keeping the message alive. And I wrote back, are you kidding? Hunter was really important to me. And they ended up sending me just this wonderful box of Gonzo swag.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is still some of my favorite pieces I've been given over the years. It was really nice to come full circle, you know, after having him be so important. Again, I'm sorry and I'm sad I never got to meet him.
He's a fascinating part of 20th century history. And
my friend Eric, who lives in Aspen, he met him when he first moved to Aspen. And literally the first day he met him, by 1 p.m., they were drinking whiskey and shooting guns.
Yeah, wow. Well, there's on the Fear and Loathing DVD... Special edition, the Criterion one. I think it's on the Criterion one. Maybe in the original. There's a short of Johnny Depp and Hunter Thompson shooting propane bottles. You know,
yeah,
propane,
yeah, yeah,
tanks.
They
hung out a lot, right?
What's that?
Filming the production, they were, yeah, very close.
Absolutely, yeah, they were very, very close. They were very, they were good friends.
Depp toured with him and, yeah, shaved his head and
spent yeah, time learning how he behaved. I don't know what the impetus of Where the Buffalo Roam is. I think it's just like a collection of essays that were turned into stories with a little bit of Fear and Loathing stuff in there.
I think so.
But Bill Murray, that was an early Bill Murray showing some real
acting chops.
Yeah, outside, absolutely, of comedic stuff, pure comedic stuff.
And it's great. That's the one where that's the famous quote. I'm not saying you should drink and do drugs, but it's always worked for me.
Yeah, that's it.
I am not saying that. Please don't repeat that. That is not an Adam Savage quote.
Yeah, it's a Hunter Thompson
quote. It's a Hunter Thompson quote.
Filtered through Bill Murray.
And then Adam Savage. Third generation quote. Right. So the casting's a little smaller.
Right, and probably we got a word or two wrong.
Right, exactly.
What's the recommended reading outside of Fear and Loathing?
Now, here's the thing about it, is that everyone usually starts with Fear and Loathing. Mm-hmm. And it's such an intense, high ride that I would, if someone asked me, recommend keeping it for later in the roster.
It's dessert.
It is. I would start with Hell's Angels. Hell's Angels is a short little book.
It's big.
Is it?
It's pretty thick.
I remember reading it and barely.
It goes real fast.
Wow. At any rate, it's a very fast read. It's super, super, you know, you can sink your teeth into it. After Hell's Angels, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail is completely seminal and really important.
Before you read that, though, it's important that you learn a little bit about, because it just jumps right in the deep end.
Right.
And if you don't know who McGovern and Humphreys
Nixon, you want to do a little.
You need to do a little bit of research on like politics in 1971.
Oh my gosh. So one of Hunter Thompson's big things, big on sports, did a lot of writing about sports and followed college ball completely.
Well, and NFL.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing that he and Nixon bonded over.
Right. No.
Hated Nixon.
It's college ball, though, that Nixon bonded.
Right, right.
So they're in a bathroom and they're taking a leak next to each other and he says something and Nixon says something and Nixon, in this brief statement, reveals a deep, abiding love and knowledge of college football.
Oh, yeah.
Which Thompson spends 5 pages going, what do I do now that the most evil bastard on the earth has stated a love for college ball? I need to re-examine whether college ball is something I should be into.
can I love football after knowing that Nixon
and he really just, he's soul searching. I can't believe Nixon loves college football.
So some of the other stuff that he wrote later on, I think it was in Better Than Sex, but after Nixon died, he wrote a series of essays about what it was like to watch somebody who is his lifelong nemesis reinvent themselves as a humanitarian and a world leader. Because, you know, Nixon spent the latter part of his life kind of rehabilitating his image after Watergate.
Yeah.
And Hunter Thompson was there on the other side of that. He gloated through Watergate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, G. Gordon Liddy was a punchline for many, many Hunter Thompson jokes.
Yes.
And when Nixon died, he had is this a respected villain? Is this a respected nemesis that died? Or is this a generation of the culmination of a generation of swine?
Yeah.
And it's the Nixon, like, the other mirror image, you know, look in the mirror on one side is Hunter Thompson.
Well, and Nixon. Nixon, you know, it's also Nixon's a complicated one. I swear to God, I'd vote for him today. The guy
the guy
initiated the Clean Water Act, attempted to pass universal health care and failed, opened up lines to China, helped the EPA tremendously, if not established, if I'm not incorrect about that. I could be wrong. I give an asterisk.
It's before my time.
Asterisk next to that one. More Thompson. He also worked for a couple of years as the night doorman at the O'Farrell Club, the Mitchell Brothers topless club here in San Francisco.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And he wrote a whole book about that.
Oh, that has
That was
next
a compendium,
American
I think.
Music Hall.
What's that?
Next to the Great American Music Hall.
Yes, right next to the Great American Music Hall, yes. He worked as the night guy there, and I think it started out as a series of articles in the Chronicle that then became a book that, you know.
Wow. The essays are the most interesting. Like, the essays, Fear and Loathing is a wonderful novel. The essays are fascinating because they kind of give you a glimpse into what at the time seemed like a radicalized version of American journalism. And today is just what's on Gawker or Jezebel.
Oh, yeah.
And overdone and kind of perverted in some ways.
Well, no one has the voice is a very unique thing, and he had a very unique voice.
He had a tremendous voice. It always felt like you were reading him, either essay or book. It always felt like you were just skating on the edge. Like, this guy can't hold this together, what he's doing. And he'd wake up after, like, oh, I've been awake for 55 hours, so I popped a couple of Benzedrine and then some human adrenal extract and then took a couple of lewds to calm myself down.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Is there's a point two-thirds of the way through Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas where you think, oh, there's no way this is all going to wrap up. Like, there's no chance that this whole thing is going to pull together when there's three different hotel bills and a destroyed rental car. And, you know, it's a fantastic book.
Also, it should be noted that Hunter Thompson was famously parodied for decades in Doonesbury as the character Duke, Raoul Duke.
His alias of choice.
What's that?
Raoul Duke was his alias of choice.
Yes. And Raoul Duke. I grew up on Doonesbury, just absorbing it, reading it, and he's Gary Trudeau's still doing beautiful, challenging commentary. And Raoul Duke was always my favorite Doonesbury character. even though, of course, I, like every other everyman, am Mike Doonesbury at heart.
You want to be.
I want
to. You strive to be Mike Doonesbury.
I do. I do. Yeah, Hunter Thompson had his... was saturated in our culture at the time that I was 19, 20 years old.
So this is something you may know. Is the character Gonzo on Muppets?
I do not know. That's a great question. And I you know, I have no idea, even though I know Dave Gulls, who is Gonzo, yeah. is the voice of Gonzo in The Puppeteer. I've never asked him. I don't know why.
So this is, we got to get to the bottom of this.
So yes, we must get to the bottom okay. of this, and we will.
Okay. And on that note,
I think that's a fine.
I
place
guess
to
that's
start.
A good place to kill it. Yeah. We'll be back next week with another episode of Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project. As always, if you like what we're doing, we love likes, comments. If you have feedback, positive or negative, leave Absolutely. Comments. We like them. We read them all.
Corrections.
Yeah.
I'm sure many of our facts are wrong.
Made horrible mistakes all through this. It's all Norm's fault, clearly. Yes. So we'll see you guys next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks
see you guys
for
later.
Listening.
Bye.
Bye.
No credit card is required to start building your website today. When you sign up for Squarespace, use the offer code UNTITLED to get 10% off and support this show. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring Still Untitled. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.
What? I'm sorry.